Hello, I'm Jeff Drew, a senior editor with the Journal of Accountancy, and this is the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Today we will be talking about automation, artificial intelligence, and ways to put those to work in your firm. Joining us is Dan Griffiths. Dan is a CPA and CGMA who serves as the Director of Strategy and Leadership at Tanner LLC in Salt Lake City, where he is also a partner with the firm. Dan is also active in leadership roles throughout the profession, currently serving as a governing council member of the AICPA, and also as the youngest member of the AICPA Board of Directors, a position he has held since October 2016. Before we welcome Dan to the podcast, please take a moment for a word from our sponsor.
Did you know 75% of people now prefer to pay by credit or debit? With CPA Charge, you can let your clients pay their bill online and you'll get the reporting details you need for easy reconciliation. AICPA members can sign up at cpacharge.com/podcast and get your program fee waived for 6 months.
Dan, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here.
Well, I'm very glad you took time from your often ridiculously busy schedule to speak with us today. And, you know, the inspiration for me was, you know, a session that you taught at the Engage conference called Leveraging Automation to Focus on Value. And just for those who don't know your story, you are, you know, kind of a classically trained accountant, and then you moved into leadership coaching, and then I look at the Engage agenda and you're doing a session on, you know, leveraging automation to focus on value, and I said, well, I got to see that. So can you kind of talk about how you've ended up in this area where you're working with automation projects?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, Jeff. I run executive offsites for clients of our firm. I do about 75 of those each year. So typically that's in the context of company strategy or strategic plans. And there's a lot of leadership coaching and other things that go along with that. As a firm internally, we started looking at our own strategy, and it seemed really clear that we needed to be doing something with automation. And the current outgrowth of that thinking here at our firm has been a subsidiary that we created called Tanalytics that focuses on accounting automation and data analytics. So I've been asked as one of the younger partners at our firm to lead that up, and that's how I've gotten so involved with it.
So they figured because you're one of the young guys, you're more likely to understand the technology?
I guess. Although, well, I don't know if people really realize that even 30-somethings don't know near as much about some of the emerging technology as we probably should.
Yeah, it's like, you know, college students coming out, and it's just all natural for them.
Yeah.
So what have, you know, can you kind of briefly describe the type of projects you've been working on in the automation area and some of the results that you guys have gained or lessons learned?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So we've learned a lot along the way. There's plenty of things that we've done wrong, and we've learned a lot about how software development works and how it sometimes doesn't work. And so we've had a lot of lessons learned. Probably the best example that I could give you is just a short snippet for how things have worked out. Within the Tanalytics practice that I told you about, we've got a partnership with a software company that has some machine learning algorithms that are very, very useful when it comes to coding transactions. So think bookkeeping and accounting services on an outsourced basis for small business type clients. And we've taken, in the case of a retail franchise concept, they've got maybe 20 some odd store locations, and we've taken what used to be a brute force exercise of daily cash reconciliations and high volumes of transactions, and they had armies of accountants that were going through and having to deal with that, and automated the lion's share of it. So what used to cost about $1,000 per new store location today costs $100 per new store location. because of the machine learning that is used to automate the lion's share of the bank reconciliation, the posting and coding of transactions, and that sort of thing. So that's one specific example within our client accounting services offerings where we've seen a huge, huge return. There's lots of others I could give, but that's a quick and easy one.
Yep. So during your session, you talked about, some people might be listening to this and thinking, well, it's great his firm is out in front, but this isn't something I have to worry about right now. And you kind of talked about the perils of ignoring the speed of change. And could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think sometimes we underestimate the speed of that change, especially when there are exponential factors living underneath that change. I think the analogy I used in the session was one that comes from Chris Martinson. He's a strategist, and he gives this analogy with Fenway Park. So I don't know if those that are listening, imagine yourselves at a large baseball stadium. If it's Fenway, great, because that's what this example is based on. But if not, pick a different stadium. And imagine that I'm standing out there in the middle of the stadium on the pitcher's mound, and I have an eyedropper with some water in it. And you all are sitting up at the top of the stadium in the cheap seats. I'm going to place a single drop of water on that pitcher's mound, and then I'm going to wait 2 minutes, and I'm going to place two drops of water on the mound. I'm going to wait an additional 2 minutes. I'll place four drops of water on the mound, and so on and so forth every 2 minutes, right? And the question I'll ask people is, well, how long is it going to take for the stadium to fill with water? Sometimes the responses are things like, well, what's the relative humidity? What's the rate of evaporation? Am I going to die before this happens? Very often people will say, yeah, it's going to be a really, really long time. And you're right, in the initial phases of it, it's going to feel really, really long. But the actual answer is about 80 minutes. So 80 minutes from the time I start with that eyedropper until everybody in the stadium drowns. And the more important question to ask is not how long is it going to take for the stadium to fill with water, but how much notice are you going to have? At what point are you going to be sitting there up at the top of the stadium and go, there's a lot of water in here. Maybe I ought to think about leaving. The answer to that question is 4 minutes. And so exponential growth happens slowly and then all at once. At least that's the way we experience it. So as I'm sitting up there on the pitcher's mound and you see me place a drop of water and wait a couple minutes and then a couple of drops of water and a couple minutes more and then four drops of water and then 8 and then 16 and all the while you're sitting up there and I've told you that in 80 minutes the stadium's going to fill with water and you're kind of looking at your watch going, are you serious? But then at the very end, things change quickly. And so the peril of sort of waiting for these changes is that they're going to catch us by surprise. And so if we wait for somebody to create an out-of-the-box machine learning, data analytics, AI solution for our practices and create a QuickBooks Pro Advisor certification or its equivalent for these types of tools, if we wait for that to happen, it's probably going to be too late. So as a firm, we've concluded that we need to get out in front of this. We need to start experimenting, even if some of those experiments don't work, because I told you about one of the experiments that did work, but there have been plenty that haven't worked. But we've got to get more familiar with these tools and how they work, what the advantages, disadvantages are, so that as they evolve and as the stadium starts to fill with water, we're prepared for the opportunity that'll be there. Because I think otherwise firms are going to get caught flat-footed.
And what do firms need to know going into it? For CPAs who kind of hear these terms, machine learning and artificial intelligence and algorithms and automation. you showed something during your session called the basic continuum of automation. Can you describe that really quickly? I thought that was a really good way of going through it.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. That continuum comes with a caveat that there are technical details that it sort of overlooks, but I think it's a very useful way of conceptualizing how these different tools work and what they actually do. So I break the continuum down into at the far left side is rules-based automation, things that you can hard code into some type of an algorithm that will do something. It'll move numbers around. So for anyone that's familiar with macros in a spreadsheet, that's rules. You're just telling the computer exactly what to do. Take this number, move it over here, add a column here, add these two numbers together. That's rules-based automation. At the far right end of the continuum is the Star Trek stuff, right? The robot that has feelings and thinks for itself and all of that kind of stuff.
Commander Data.
That technology doesn't even exist today, and most folks that you talk to that know about these things will tell you that's 50 years away in terms of having computers that could even be technically feasible to create something akin to that type of artificial intelligence. And then in the middle, you've got on the continuum, I place machine learning, because machine learning is a very, let's call it a basic form of artificial intelligence. The technical people that are listening to this will say, well, it's not really artificial intelligence, and I agree with that, but think of it as sort of very rudimentary AI. So you got rules, machine learning, and AI, and there's a continuum of those tools. The fact of the matter is that most of the automation that we're taking advantage of today as a firm is on the left side of that continuum. It's in the rules-based automation. So you've probably heard of things like robotic process automation. Well, robotic process automation is just a fancy word for a macro. If you want to break it down into how it actually works, if you know how an Excel macro works, that's robotic process automation. It's a little bit more sophisticated than that, and it does some things that macros can't do, but you can think of it in those same terms. There's huge opportunity just within those robotic process automation, RPA tools. And the same is true of just some basic machine learning algorithms that can do tremendous things. So at our firm, we're not doing anything with the whiz-bang AI stuff that you hear all about. We're not trying to create a Siri on every one of our auditors' desks so that they can ask them how to account for derivatives or how to deal with Section 704 of the Internal Revenue Code. We're not doing any of that right now. Because quite honestly, the resource investment required to do any of that stuff is just beyond what a firm like ours could do. But on the rule side, the RPA side, the machine learning side, there's plenty of low-hanging fruit at that end of the continuum.
Okay. So are there some tools in the market that you see quite a bit that people should know about, at least know the names?
I think there's a few that you ought to at least know the names of and start familiarizing yourself with. The most common RPA, robotic process automation tool, that's being used in corporate finance functions right now to automate massive swaths of finance and accounting at large enterprises. So think companies with 10,000 people in their finance function. Those types of enterprises are using these tools. So BlackLine would be the probably the most widely used or recognized one in that space. It's very expensive. So for the average CPA, it's not something we're going to go out and buy. But it would be worthwhile for you to just go poke around on the internet and do a BlackLine demo or check out some videos to sort of familiarize yourself with what that tool does, what's possible, because it will trickle down. There are a couple of smaller options. One's called NICE RPA, N-I-C-E. And another one called Foxtrot that we've demoed and fiddled around with here at our firm. There's some interesting opportunities to significantly streamline and automate big swaths of what we do using tools like that. And they're much more affordable for the small to medium sized business than a tool like BlackLine would be.
Okay. Can you give an idea of like the magnitude? Is that something you're paying in the thousands for? Is it subscription?
Yeah. NICE, you're looking at more of a subscription, and you can kind of scale it up based on how much you use. With something like Foxtrot, you could think of maybe a few thousand dollars to get a license, depending on what level of license you get and how you plan on using it. So it's it's definitely within the realm of the doable for smaller companies or smaller firms.
And what kind of projects should CPAs be thinking about in terms of using, you know, RPA tools?
I think client accounting services is the most ripe for these kinds of tools. So if you think about the $5 million or $10 million revenue company that you're currently serving and they need some bookkeeping and accounting help and their books are a mess, you could go in there and use some of these tools and significantly automate major swaths of what they're doing. And the great thing about client accounting services is the risk is relatively low. So, for example, you've got a $5 million company today. For their accounting and bookkeeping, they're spending maybe $5,000 a month on some staffing resources to help them with that. They're not doing a particularly good job. They've had a lot of turnover in those positions. And they say, you know what, could you guys just handle this for us? You say, yeah, for $5,000 a month, we'll do it. Worst case scenario, you brute force that exercise for $5,000 a month. You streamline a few processes. And you eke out a minimal profit margin. But best case, if you can find the right tools that will help automate those processes, then you've just set it up so that with very few man hours per month, you're getting $5,000 from a client to significantly improve the quality of the accounting that they're getting. So I think client accounting services is really low hanging fruit. It's a great place to experiment. I would also say that on the rules side of things, even without using any kind of very sophisticated robotic process automation or machine learning or any of that, you can take and piece together just workflow automation tools that dramatically improve the automation for a client accounting services client. So if you take Receipt Bank and HubDoc and QuickBooks Online or Xero and Bill.com and Avalara for sales tax, and a few of those tools and just stitch them together for, let's say, a $5 million revenue company, it's quite likely that you can take that $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 a month that they're willing to pay for bookkeeping or accounting outsourcing. And just with those tools alone, you could dramatically improve efficiencies just by creating streamlined workflow.
Yeah. And that can produce, you know, obviously, when you look at it like on a per hour basis for the clients, that can save them, you know, I believe you said in your session, like $400 an hour.
Yeah, if you're looking at realized rates for firms that are doing this, if you even looked at our own practice and other practices out there that are doing this, the realized rates can be significant. So $300 an hour, $400 an hour are not unheard of. And when you look at profit margins for those types of practice lines, they're significantly better than they are for traditional compliance, audit, tax, review type services.
Which is part of the reason the AICPA has been really interested in the client accounting services space for the five, six years that I've been here at the JVA and covering technology and stuff. So.
And CPA.com is a great place for people to look for some of those resources, the AICPA subsidiary that's really been promoting some of these tools. If you're looking to try and just dip a toe in the water, check out CPA.com, maybe attend one of their conferences or webinars, and there's some great stuff there.
Yeah, the Digital CPA Conference in December, I think it's in December or November. Pretty sure it's still in December this year.
Yeah, I think it's the first week of December in D.C.
Yep. So, which is where they held the first one. And that's where I really first learned a lot about client accounting services was at that conference. And we did a cover story right after that. And so it's been around for a while and it's starting to pick up some momentum. So before we wrap this up, I wanted to, you said some interesting things in your Engage session about how you price these engagements. And one thing you mentioned is you should not include a technology charge in your pricing, you know, for the costs of the automation tools. So can you briefly explain why?
Yes. So candidly, the client doesn't care what your software costs.
Yep.
they're looking, they're hiring you to get some kind of a result for them. And so over and over and again, I'll see firms burning bridges with their clients by tacking on a technology charge. You're much more effective, at least in our experience, we've been much more effective in just bundling things. So build it all in, whatever the tech might cost you, and then sell a service to your client. So in the case of automation, this is particularly important because the value that we're providing to the client is in the know-how and understanding of stitching together these different tools in a way that helps automate and streamline the process of creating sound financial information for them and taking care of their bookkeeping and accounting. So it's that they're paying for. And so if we bill by the hour, then should we succeed in doing what we set out to do, our fees go down, right? Right. So if I start out with a client and initially it's going to take me a ton of time. So the first 3 months we're going to invest lots and lots of hours in setting things up right and streamlining and automating and all of that. Well, then I'm going to bill the client a whole bunch up front during the time when they're not really getting a whole lot of value because we're still setting things up and we're working out kinks and everything else. So there's a mismatch. The client's getting billed a ton, but they're not seeing the value. So that's not good. And then as we move through, as the value we create increases because we've succeeded in creating the automation, streamlining workflow, et cetera, then our billing actually goes down. And yet the client is realizing greater value. So there's a significant mismatch between the client's perception of what they're getting and what we're billing. So if we're thinking from an hourly billing paradigm, it's exactly the opposite of what the client is going to want to experience. So what we've done instead is to say, look, if it's going to be $3,500 a month to take this stuff on for you, recognizing we're going to take it in the shorts in terms of our hourly rates for the first couple of months while we get everything set up. But then we're highly motivated to streamline those processes and workflows for the client and to make things easier and simpler and faster. Instead of, in the case where we're billing by the hour and tacking on a technology charge, we're actually motivated to not automate, to not streamline, to not do the things that the client wants us to do, because we're charging by the hour and we're tacking on this technology fee. So we've found much greater success in aligning incentives with more of a fixed pricing type model for us for a scope of services, as opposed to trying to break out every little component, including things like technology charges, which drive clients nuts.
Thank you for listening to the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Please find this and other episodes on the J of A page on Podomatic or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.